Get a taxi and bring your things round right away. Veronica accepted. The offer was beyond her hopes. She asked no questions, she did not even permit her mind to question. She literally flung herself into this haven of refuge and thanked whatever gods might be. Lucas himself let her out of the front door and watched her for a moment as she walked down the road, a little smile curling his lips. He was evidently well pleased with his bargain. Veronica returned to the hostel that had been her home during the long months she had worked at the training school. There was little enough in her cubicle to pack, and, having put her meager belongings together, she went to the office to pay her bill. "Where shall we send your letters?" asked the superintendent. Veronica gave the address. "So you have got a resident post. What work are you going to do?" Not until the question was put to her did Veronica realize that she had never inquired the nature of the work on which she was about to be engaged, any more than Lucas had inquired as to her capacities or references. Reluctantly she admitted her ignorance. "But, Miss Mannering, you do not mean to say that you have accepted a post, and a resident post too, without inquiring who you were working for. Perhaps you don't even know whether it is a man or a woman." "It is a man," said Veronica, "and his name is Lucas," and she realized that that was absolutely all she knew. She did not even know what would be her hours or duties, what demands he would make on her, or what qualifications she would require, and she suddenly remembered that he was paying her as a resident secretary the salary she had demanded, believing she would have to support herself. "Surely exceptional requirements must condition the payment of such a salary. I do not feel at all happy about you," said the superintendent. "But at any rate, you are near here, so you must come round and let us know how you get on." Veronica wished her goodbye and transported her few belongings in a taxi round to the house in the square. The impassive butler again admitted her, and again Veronica experienced the sensation that she was in a church. The strange, indescribable feeling of remoteness and stillness enveloped her. A pleasant-faced woman appeared from the nether regions and conducted her to two rooms upon an upper floor. They looked straight into the heart of a great plane tree that stood in the garden of the next house, for the whole of the back premises of the house she was in were occupied by a large, one-story annex. The rooms led one out of the other, pleasant, old-fashioned rooms with deep windows east to the bow windows, such as Bloomsbury abounds in. For the rich city merchants who inhabited the district during its heyday knew what comfort meant. Big sash windows let in the light, and heavy wooden shutters, folding back into the walls, were equally capable of shutting out both light and air. A capacious great bore witness to the good old days of plenty, and, glimpsed through the open door of the adjoining room, a high feather bed with a curtained canopy declared that the tradition was not forgotten, and that the present owners of the house also knew what comfort, if not what hygiene, meant. Her reverie was interrupted by the butler's voice. "We will send up your dinner at 7, miss. All your meals will be served up here." "Will Mr. Lucas want me this evening?" she asked. "I don't know, miss. He is out at present," and she was left to her own devices with instructions to ring for anything she required. Her unpacking disposed of, she sat on the broad, rep-covered window seat watching the birds in the tree. She had a curious feeling that she was a prisoner, free in appearance, as the lions on the Mappin terraces are free, yet ringed round upon every side by invisible barriers. She wished the superintendent had kept silence and refrained from instilling that uneasy doubt. Why could not people leave one to one's own devices? True, she did not know the nature of her work or the occupation of Lucas. But why should things be wrong? The butler's wife came up with a tray, and Veronica determined to make good the deficiencies in her knowledge by judicious questioning. "Have you been here long, Mrs. Ashlett?"
"Law, yes, miss. I come here when I married. Ashlett's been here, man and boy, these 40 years.
"Has Mr. Lucas been here long?"
"No, miss. Only 5 or 6 years. He is quite a newcomer."
"Does anyone else live in the house beside Mr. Lucas?"
"No, miss. Only you and me and Ashlett regular like, But the gentlemen are always coming and going, and we often puts them up for the night. I always keeps the beds made up. What is Mr. Lucas? Asked Veronica boldly.
Secretary, miss.
Oh, said Veronica. And the gentlemen, what are they?
Ah, said Mrs. Ashlett.
Now you re-asking. Them as knows most tells least. With which cryptic utterance she departed. It was after 10 o'clock, and Veronica was thinking of bed when there came a knock at the door, and in response to her summons, Lucas entered.
Don't he get up, he said as she rose nervously, the superintendent's suspicions flashing through her mind.
I won't keep you long. I only wanted to explain to you one or two things about your job. The work comes in rushes, and unexpectedly, at all hours of the 24, in fact, so I don't want you to go out for the next few days, but to be in the house so that I can get you if I want you suddenly. After that, if I decide to keep you on, I will make arrangements for you to have regular time off duty. The work is not exacting. A good part of the time you will have nothing whatever to do, but I want you to be at hand in case I need you. Veronica's heart had sunk while he was speaking. So her post was not yet a security. The uncertainty, and the renewed anxiety it engendered, made her acquiesce very humbly to Lucas's request that she should not leave the house for the next few days. He remained for a few minutes, chatting with her pleasantly and kindly, evidently wishing to put her at her ease and make her feel settled and contented. Moreover, his words had done their work. Veronica, secure of her post, might have been tempted to question and criticize the conditions of it, but Veronica, insecure, clung desperately, dreading to find herself out of work and with a black mark against her name on the school register. At all costs she must keep this, her first post, long enough to have a respectable reference. With a single phrase he had ensured her obedience. For 1 week she would accept the most eccentric commands without question. She would humor him to the top of his bent, refuse nothing, protest against nothing. And a week was all that Lucas required for the installing of his occult telephone. The next morning Veronica awaited her employer's pleasure at 9, likewise at 10, but he did not come. Finally at 11 he appeared, smelling pleasantly of soap and very spick and span and cheerful, and the morning's work commenced. Veronica found that hers was to be the appalling task of copying voluminous documents, every one of which was in cipher. Letter by letter, the weird gibberish had to be copied and then counter-checked. When the copying was finished, however, there seemed to be nothing else for her to do. Lucas himself worked indefatigably, but apparently did not see fit to entrust her with any further tasks. She sat at her desk, hands folded, watching his bent back. Time went on, and time went on, and still he worked, and still she waited. At 1 o'clock he called a halt for lunch, bidding her return at 2. But when she returned at that hour and inquired what she was to do next, he appeared somewhat nonplussed, as if he had not been expecting such an inquiry, and looked vaguely round at the furniture, as if it might be in need of her services. No response being forthcoming, his gaze returned to Veronica, and she fancied that he was trying not to smile. "I have nothing for you to do at the moment," he said. "You can have a look at these if you like," and he pointed to a pile of morning papers lying on a chair. Veronica read what the Tories had to say about the Liberals, and the Liberals about the Tories, and the Socialists concerning both, till 5 o'clock, when Lucas, who had worked unintermittently, rose, stretched himself, and announced that he had to go out.
"Will you want me again this evening?" asked Veronica.
He shook his head. "I shall not come back till late."
"Then would you mind if I just ran round to the hostel? It is only in the next square. The superintendent asked me to go in and see her."
Veronica raised her eyes to his as she spoke, and saw to her amazement that the pupils had entirely disappeared. Two greenish-brown discs looked back at her without a trace of expression, inhuman, malignant, horrible. Anything more sinister it would be impossible to imagine than this human countenance from which all trace of humanity had suddenly been erased. She stood rooted to the floor, gazing at this horror till Lucas's voice broke the spell. I would prefer you did not go out for the present, as I have already told you, he said. Someone might ring up on the phone, he added, by way of explanation. The pupils of his eyes were slowly returning to their normal proportions. He looked at her sharply, perceiving her consternation. What is the matter? He asked. Nothing, said Veronica. She could not very well explain to him that it was the horror of his face that had overcome her. He continued to stare at her, not with the offensive stare of a man's curiosity, but with an entirely impersonal inspection. Apparently the result was unsatisfactory, for he took a step towards her. Instinctively Veronica stepped back. Lucas took another step, and Veronica again retreated. She was against the desk now, and could go no further, and Lucas came right up to her and looked into her eyes. She was powerless to withdraw them and gazed back at him helpless, fascinated. He was not a tall man, and his face was almost on a level with hers, but a sense of power issued from him that held her spellbound. She looked and looked, and did not wish to turn away. Vitality radiated from those eyes, intense, magnetic, compelling. Veronica went on looking. She might have stood thus till she turned to stone if the man himself had not released her. Something shut down in his eyes, the power was cut off, and she was looking into an ordinary human countenance, olive-skinned, clear-cut, far from unprepossessing. Her horror of him was gone, in its place remained a curious fascination. What was he going to do next? She wanted to see. Her eyes followed every movement he made about the room. She knew that he was aware of this scrutiny, that he expected it, did not resent it. She was sorry now that he was going out, everything would seem very flat and lifeless when he was gone. He looked up, caught her eyes, and smiled. She did not attempt to turn away. Go upstairs to your rooms, he said. Mrs. Ashlett will bring you your supper. You will do all right. Obediently she went towards the door. He opened it to let her out, closing it behind her with the click of a concealed lock. She went upstairs. As she turned at the half-landing she saw that he was still looking after her, his eyes sparkling with some secret satisfaction. Dully she wondered what it might be, but her mind for the moment seemed at a standstill and refused its service. She went up to her room and flinging herself upon the bed, fell into a deep sleep from which she was only awakened by the appearance of Mrs. Ashlett with her supper tray 2 hours later. She did not feel hungry, but made some pretense of eating her supper for the sake of Mrs. Ashlett. Then, the meal dispatched, she sat on the window seat, watching the setting sun. All her uneasiness was gone, she was placid, contented, non-thinking. She gazed at the great red globe, shorn of its power by the thick London atmosphere, with a face as expressionless as its own. Slowly it sank. Its rim touched the horizon. Gradually it disappeared. With its going a change occurred. The room felt suddenly cold, close August night though it was. Veronica sat up, and pulled herself together with a little shiver. What was it? What was the matter? Then with a rush the horror of Lucas's eyes returned to her. She sprang to her feet. What house was this that she was in? The Ashlotts, Lucas. The mysterious gentleman. Who and what were they all? And she, was she trapped? Did Lucas not intend to let her out? And if so, what did he mean to do with her? What was his motive? Was it all real or was it a nightmare? One thing was quite clear, she would not stop another second in this awful place. She must get out of it at all costs. Nothing mattered compared to that. She put on her hat, and caught up her purse. Her things did not matter, she could send for those later. Down the passage, she sped on tiptoe, her feet making no sound on the thick dark carpet. But in an alcove was a settee, and on the settee a man sat reading. It was Lucas. I thought you would, he said, without looking up. Veronica was desperate. For a moment she stood poised, checked in mid-career, then she sprang forward again. Lucas did not hear her, the heavy carpet gave back no sound, and she was a dozen feet down the passage before he noticed her maneuver. She literally hurled herself down the stairs, hardly touching the steps with her feet, swung herself round the bend by the banisters and was off down the next flight. There was a thud behind her as Lucas jumped the whole flight and landed in the passage. Then she felt herself caught from behind, and her elbows pinned to her sides. She screamed shrilly, and a hand was clapped over her mouth. Desperately she struggled till the arm that encircled her shifted its grip and clutched her into breathless immobility. Then they remained motionless. It was the first time that Veronica had had closer contact with a man than the conventional handshake, and her first sensation was utter astonishment. His strength was so much greater than she had expected. He was so surprisingly hard too, as a sinewy forearm pinned her ruthlessly against his chest, and he smelt of strong pipe tobacco and shaving soap, strange, unfamiliar, unfeminine smells. Veronica was so taken up with her observations that she forgot to be frightened till she felt Lucas shift his grip from her breast to her waist, and with the breath half crushed out of her, carry her downstairs and drop her unceremoniously among the cushions of the office sofa. He stood back and inspected her, smoothing his ruffled hair, breathless, laughing. Veronica straightened her skirts and gathered together the shreds of her dignity. "I wish to leave," she said. "Do you?" said Lucas, tucking the ends of his tie back into his waistcoat. "I am afraid I can't spare you." "Why not? You happen to be useful to me. But you can get another secretary."
"I don't want a secretary."
Then why did you engage me? You would not understand if I told you, my dear child, so there is no use wasting time in explanations." He pulled down his waistcoat, shot forward his cuffs, and adjusted his coat collar. Then, these preliminaries concluded, he gave Veronica his undivided attention. For several seconds they returned each other's gaze, then Lucas reached forward a thin brown forefinger and touched the soft round girlish throat. "There is something round your neck," he said. Up went Veronica's hand involuntarily. "Look," he said, "it is a steel collar." The image his words evoked flashed into her mind, and as it did so, she felt cold hard metal under her hand. "There is a steel chain attached to it," the man's soft level voice continued. "A slender steel chain. Run your hand down it." He took her hand in his and drew it towards him, and she felt the links run through her fingers. "And I hold the end of it," he added significantly. "If you try to call out, or to tell what I do not wish told, that collar will contract till it strangles you. Feel, it is contracting now." Veronica felt something rigid grip her about the throat. The pressure steadily increased. She gasped and fought for air as the trachea closed. Then Lucas touched her forehead. "It has relaxed now," he said. "But remember, this will happen again if ever you try to give me away." Veronica drew in a great lungful of air and rose to her feet. She was too perplexed to feel frightened. Lucas was smiling at her pleasantly. "Go to bed now," he said. "Sleep well, pleasant dreams. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning." Chapter 3. Veronica went to her room, but sleep was another matter. The events of the day had been so strange that her bewilderment was almost greater than her fear. If an event is far enough removed from the normal, one doubts the evidence of one's senses, the reliability of one's memory. Retrospectively, it takes on the appearance of fantasy rather than reality. To Veronica it seemed that she must have imagined the scuffle with Lucas, the extraordinary affair of the collar and chain. What motive could he possibly have in retaining a not very brilliant shorthand typist against her will? He had not attempted to make love to her, his touch had been by no manner of means a caress, in fact he had handled her as if she had been a recalcitrant puppy. And that extraordinary phantom collar and chain which appeared from nowhere at his touch and vanished again at the word of command. They were the most tangible part of the whole affair. Veronica had a very distinct remembrance of that strangulating pressure on her throat. Would that really occur if she tried to break away from Lucas? Would she feel that awful tightening, that inability to breathe, if she attempted to appeal to others for help, to tell that which he did not wish to be told? If so, then she were trapped indeed. And that curious chain, what would happen if she tried to run away? Would it clank through the streets at her heels? And if so, surely someone would notice it. Utterly bewildered, she sat on her bed staring through the wide open window into the warm summer night. It was too late to try the experiment now, but she determined to arise at daybreak and slip out before the household were awake. Comforted by this thought, Veronica began to undress, and the events of the evening retreated still further into the land of shadows as the little everyday details of disrobing brought her back to the workaday world where people do not chase each other down the stairs or ghostly chains materialize out of thin air. Then, as she was about to put the light out, the sense of reality returned with a rush. Supposing what he had said were true, supposing she were bound by an invisible chain which would tighten and strangle her if she disobeyed Lucas, why, then, she was in his hands, body and soul. She could not run away, she could not cry out, and yet her bonds would be invisible, imperceptible to anyone but herself, and no one would believe her if she told them, and even if she tried to tell them, Lucas's power would descend upon her, choking, strangling her, and she would be fighting for the air that she was powerless to draw into her lungs. She sat up in bed and with difficulty restrained herself from shrieking aloud at the horror of her invisible prison. She was indeed in a cage whose bars were invisible. She could not claim the help or sympathy of her fellow beings. She was as much alone in this world of men and women as if Lucas had transferred her to another planet. She had a notion that Ashlet might understand, but she was quite sure he would not help. But the policeman at the corner, the superintendent of the hostel, if she appealed to them for help would think she was insane, and yet that collar and chain were quite real enough to strangle her. The problem was beyond her solution. Despairingly she settled down upon the pillows to wait for dawn. Downstairs in the office Lucas was writing up his diary. A green-shaded lamp cast a circle of bright light on the desk and the rest of the room was in darkness. The events of the day had apparently been much to his liking, for a little smile curled his lips as he wrote. Things came to a head this afternoon. The neat small writing, clear as print, advanced along the lines of the book in front of him. Had to put the cards on the table sooner than I expected, but found VM very suggestible and got her well in hand. And do not anticipate any difficulty in putting her into a trance. Think she ought to do very well provided her body will hold together, but her physique is frail and she has been badly overstrained. Have told Mrs. Ashlett to feed her up well. Mrs. A. thinks I have a kind heart. V.M. tried to bolt. Chased her downstairs and carried her into the office where I suggested to her that I had put a collar and chain on her. She took the suggestion very well. Told her that the collar would strangle her if she tried to talk, and she nearly choked. Very curious, same mechanism as asthma. She'll have to be careful not to choke her altogether. Lucas locked the book and put it away in his private safe. Yes, he had every reason to be satisfied with the day's work. He had backed his clairvoyance to enable him to pick out a potential psychic from the miscellaneous collection of women the secretarial agencies had sent him in response to his demand for a shorthand typist, and it looked as if he had picked a winner. Veronica Mannering was certainly very sensitive. The only question was, would she be strong enough? Trance work was a frightful strain. It always told heavily on the men who acted as a cult telephone when the lodges were communicating. She would probably last his time, however, all he wanted was the words of power. Things certainly seemed propitious at any rate. He would have a look at his horoscope and see what foreboded. Lucas knew from experience the influence of the macrocosm which is our universe, upon the microcosm which man, and he would not, if it could be avoided, embark upon an enterprise of such importance as the present if the stars were unpropitious. True, a man can master his stars, he would say, but why should I swim against the current when, if I but wait a little while, the tide will be with me? So he noted the set of the heavenly tides and so ordered his course that they might aid and not oppose. What he found tonight was quite satisfactory. Neptune, the occult planet, was well aspected in his house of fortune, reinforced by Mars, the fighter. The only doubtful aspect was Venus. Much afflicted, and in the house of death. Lucas considered the chart carefully. Ah, well, he said finally, One cannot have everything, and anyway, Venus is not a lady who has ever troubled me much. With which he too went to bed. Veronica did not think that the Ashlots would be stirring much before 7, but the hostel would be awake well before that time, for business girls have to rise early and be fed before they go to their work. She set her alarm for 5 o'clock, that would give her time to pack her scanty belongings into the 2 suitcases that constituted her luggage, and enable her to slip round to the hostel before anybody in this house was stirring. The superintendent had been uneasy at the time she had accepted the post, and would surely lend assistance, even if Veronica judiciously suppressed the incident of the collar and chain, which was likely to invalidate her whole story, prime horror though it was. The fact that Lucas had chased her downstairs and forcibly prevented her from leaving the house was quite sufficient. She fell into an uneasy doze, between sleeping and waking, but whenever unconsciousness stole over her she was snatched back by fear, and wide awake, every nerve tingling, every muscle taut, her whole soul stood upon the defensive. It seemed but a little while before grey stole into the sky, and as soon as it was light enough to see, she arose and packed. It was before 6 o'clock that she stole on tiptoe down the passage. There was no Lucas on the settee this time, as she had almost expected to see him, and her progress was unbarred. She crept on and on with her heart in her mouth. She knew the Ashlots slept in the basement, but she was not sure where Lucas's room was. A pair of brown brogues outside a door on the lower landing informed her, and she went past hardly daring to breathe. The hall was filled with the stale odors of a shoot-up house, but the great front door presented no difficulties. Its bolts were never shot, a spring lock alone securing the house from intrusion, for Mrs. Ashlott's gentleman came and went at all hours of the 24. It opened silently, but Veronica did not dare to risk the click of the lock should she shut it behind her. For a moment she paused on the broad step. Was that strange chain going to tighten and strangle her? Nothing happened, however, and in another moment she was speeding down the street, free. In 5 minutes she was round at the hostel, where the superintendent, clad in a wrapper but wide awake, viewed her with surprise mingled with disapproval. "What brings you here at this time in the morning?" she demanded. Veronica was almost too breathless to reply, and the superintendent, seeing that trouble was afoot, drew her into the office out of the gaze of an inquisitive charwoman. There, she turned gimlet eyes upon the girl and awaited her explanation. The world is very ready with advice and warning to save the young and innocent from getting into difficulties, but once trouble has supervened it is a different matter, and the world begins to think how best it can avoid being involved. "There has been," began Veronica awkwardly, "a little unpleasantness where I have been working. Mr. Lucas, the man I am working for, I think he forgot himself. We had a scuffle. I don't want to go back again. Can I stop here? Is my cubicle still empty?" "Your cubicle is not let yet," said the superintendent somewhat ungraciously. "Yes, I suppose you can stop here if you want to, so long as there is no further trouble, but we don't want any unpleasantness here. I will send the porter round for your box. I thought at the time you were very ill advised to take that post." She paused, eyeing Veronica inquisitively. "What is Mr. Lucas like?" she inquired finally. "He is a very strange man," began Veronica slowly, "the strangest I have ever met." Memory called up a vision of Lucas before her eyes. Smooth olive skin, sharp-cut nose, thin-lipped, firm of chin, with the uncanny greeny-brown eyes. What would he do when he found she had got away? She paused, oblivious of the superintendent, arrested by the image that rose so vividly before her eyes. But horror of horrors, it was ceasing to be a memory picture, it was becoming alive, actual, capable of action. A thin brown hand was being stretched out towards her as it had been the night before. A voice, surely the superintendent must hear it, was saying, "There is a steel collar about your neck, you will not be able to breathe if you say any more. There is a steel chain attached to the collar, the end of it is in my hand, you will have to come back." Jerk. Veronica took 2 stumbling steps towards the door.
another jerk at the chain, and she took two more. "Where are you going?" demanded the superintendent, staring at her suspiciously.